and welcome to Untold, the podcast where we go behind the scenes and uncover the untold stories of food and drink businesses. I'm Harry, founder of The Savourist.
I'm Mariana, founder of Hullabaloo. We want to uncover some of the stories from founders and business leaders that wouldn't normally be told. Everyone talks about the positives, the new launches, the NPD.
We want to hear about the not so great things, the nitty gritty and the emotional toll this can have on mental health. Over the next few months, we're going to be talking to founders and business owners about their untold stories. Hello and welcome to Untold, the podcast where we go behind the scenes to find out about things that haven't gone right in business. Today, we have a really exciting guest and Mariana is going to introduce her.
So our guest today is Lucy Wager. Unlike a lot of founders of challenger brands, Lucy actually had a food background before. She used to work as a product developer for M&S. What we're going to talk about mostly today is her time with Podology, which she founded in 2012, being a pioneer in free from puddings. Welcome, Lucy.
Thank you. Thanks very much for having me. Really pleased to be here and talking to you about my Podology journey. I feel like I've told this story so many times, but there's always something new to share, and it's particularly interesting to sort of share it from a sort of mindset and emotional perspective as well, rather than just the sort of business sense.
Great. So could you kick off by introducing yourself?
Yeah, so I'm Lucy Wager and I have been working in the food industry for 17 years now. I've always, even growing up, I had a passion for food, loved cooking, loved eating out. I did a food and consumer management degree, and funnily enough, I at the end of that degree, I decided I definitely didn't want to work in food, and I was gonna, and I applied for like random graduate courses, and then eventually thought this doesn't really feel quite right. So I then applied for the, at the time it's called GEAST, it's now Bacavor graduate scheme, and became a concept technologist. That was my first sort of introduction to the food industry. And I worked in dips and dressings and dressed salads in that business, and got to work with all the retailers. So it was like immediately I was into the sort of own label world of development. And then 18 months into that, I had the opportunity to go and work as a product developer at Sainsbury's, which I jumped at the chance to do that because I left Lincolnshire, moved to London. And absolutely loved that. Worked in ready meals and did a bit of desserts in that business as well. And then 2.5 years later, somebody that I'd worked with at Sainsbury's had left and moved to M&S, and I got a call saying, there's this opportunity at M&S, would you be interested? And I was like, yes. And that, because that was sort of my ultimate goal, was to be a product developer at M&S. So moved position, still based in London, started working as a product developer at M&S, which was a huge culture shock change, because Sainsbury's was, and I think still is, quite a young person's place to work. And at the time, certainly, the product development team at M&S was all older. I was very young. I was only 24, I think, at that time, which was young for a product developer anyway. And I definitely had to sort of earn my stripes at M&S. So it was a pretty, it was quite a hard initial 6 months, because I hadn't really expected that. I think I was quite naive going into that job. But eventually I did earn my stripes, and I loved that position. And I was really lucky because I travelled to Thailand and Vietnam. And then later on, about 9 months later, I went to India as well, because I covered all the Asian ready meals, basically. So anything that wasn't Italian or British sort of came under my area, which was fantastic. And that has really left me with a real passion for Asian cuisine. But during that time, when I went to India, I had a fantastic trip, absolutely loved it, and got back, and 3 days later was really, really very ill, and with sort of food poisoning symptoms. And I got a little bit better, and then it was Christmas 3 weeks later, and then I was really ill, like even worse. Like, and it was quite scary, because I'd sort of recovered and then was very ill again. And so I went to the doctors, and they were like, well, you've been to India, what do you expect? Kind of thing, which is really helpful. And I, at that point, I was just like, you know, she said, you haven't been ill for 10 weeks. If you've been this ill for 10 weeks, you know, then we would need to do something about it. And I was like, if I'm this ill for 10 weeks, I'm going to die. Because I literally couldn't eat or drink anything. It was really bad.
Jeepers.
Anyway, so I got under a really good consultant, and basically I'd picked up Campylobacter and had like a really bad reaction. And one of the things about being a product developer is you do abuse your digestive system because you like constantly eat. And I think sort of that coupled, and I'd had appendicitis 6 months before. So my digestive system was just in a bit of turmoil. And then I like introduced Campylobacter and everything just went to hell, basically. So that's really where my podology story started, because over the course of a year, I really didn't get a lot better. And my doctors were sort of saying, you've got to stop sampling at work, because I was still developing the products that we'd researched, and I was like trying it but spitting it out. But any dairy or eggs or anything that I ate that I was sort of reacting to would just sort of set me back. So in the end, I sort of turned my life upside down. I left M&S, moved up north, and I did a year working as a recruitment consultant for the food industry. And it was really during that time that I sort of recognized a gap in the market. So this was back in 2011. So the plant-based and the free-from market as we know it now was, you know, unrecognizable. It was just so basic back then. And so I recognized this gap in the market for something that was just really indulgent, but just happened to be dairy-free. And I also had a friend that was gluten-free and nut-free. So I basically developed these products that would meet our needs, because I knew that there would be, I didn't realize it would take quite so long, but I knew that there was going to be movement in that area. So I decided to leave my recruitment role after a year and concentrated on setting up this business. And I was like, you know, I know how to launch products because I'm a developer, and you said, you know, I've obviously worked in the industry. And I think that has its like huge benefits, but also its huge downsides, because I then spent the next 7 years sort of thinking, God, why, when I was at MS, why didn't I like go and spend some time with the logistics department, or, you know, because there were like all these things when you work in a big business that you take for granted. Mm-hmm. When you're on your own, you're really on your own. And I think that's one of the things I really struggled with for the whole time I was doing podology, because I felt like I should know how to do everything. And I did try to do everything for far too long. And that's one of the things that I talk about a lot, with, you know, hindsight is such a wonderful thing, is I'm not very good at delegating, and I've always known that, but I didn't really properly appreciate it, I don't think. And I put way too much pressure on myself and tried to do too much for too long, basically. And so one of the things that I always say to people who are starting out, or, you know, in a similar position to what I was in, sort of, you know, you've got to identify your strengths and focus on your strengths, and let other people focus on what they're good at, and bring people in that can help you, because it made my life miserable, basically. And so, sorry, I've cut quite a lot out there. So I set up the business, and initially we had this fantastic response, because there was literally nothing else like it in the market. You know, we were the first chilled, free from, indulgent dessert, basically. And then we launched a range of yogurts as well. I manufactured it myself. So my parents kind of came on this journey with me. And we initially hired a catering kitchen, which we got up to Salsa standard. And then we very quickly moved out of there and got our own unit, which we got up to Salsa standard. We had Salsa audit on. And we supplied Waitrose and Ocado and Holland & Barrett from that site. And we could produce up to about 3,000 desserts a day. And we were probably producing about 3 or 4 times a week. And then when it got to a stage where we needed to move out of there, which I should also say, I hated the manufacturing side of it. So, you know, and initially I did look at outsourcing in the very early days, but the market just wasn't ready for it. And I spoke, because obviously I knew lots of people in the industry, and I spoke to sort of some of the bigger factories, and they were just like, there isn't a market for this. People aren't going to pay that much. You haven't got any customers, you know, the same kind of story that you have if you've got a new idea, So that's why we started doing it ourselves. And once we'd kind of built the customer base, we then decided, right, we either need to invest and get into a much bigger sort of BRC standard facility, or we need to outsource. And because the business was self-funded, so we never saw outside investment, and I really didn't have a passion for the manufacturing and operation side of it because it took up so much of my time and energy. And although my dad was fantastic from a manufacturing perspective, you know, he was retired and loved it, but also would go on, you know, 6 week holidays and stuff, and then I'd be left like to manage it all. I just didn't like doing it. And it didn't allow me the time to do the bit that I'm good at, which is the product development side, and kind of develop the brand more and all of that side of it. So we decided to outsource at that point. So that was probably about 3 years in. And so that was our first experience of outsourcing, which was brilliant because it freed me up. And I should also say that at that point, I had just got married and I was then pregnant. So I think I was pregnant when we did the first transfer. A bit of a common theme here with pregnancy and factory transfers.
I can't even imagine how you did that. I mean, I know somewhat of your story, but like having small children and going through all of that is like, it's mental.
Yeah. And like, it was
incredible.
Yeah. And the first time I did it was actually, I was going to say it was fine. It wasn't as traumatic as the second time I did it. Let's put it that way. Mm. And I think, you know, the market was still developing at that stage. And I should say we had real ups and downs when we first launched, because the market itself really wasn't ready for what we were doing. The customer was ready, but they couldn't find where we were. And because we had a very limited budget, it was really difficult to let people know that we were available. And because this was before there were any like vegan or free from sections within chilled, for example. So it was really difficult to sort of know where we should fit. So that was like always a huge challenge. But I had my baby, and it was great because I had just outsourced my manufacturing. So I suddenly had sort of what I felt like was a lot of time because I didn't have to do the manufacturing. So that was like this huge relief. But I had this constant like guilt complex of I've got a baby and I've got this business and where to spend my time and sort of how to develop the business. And I sort of even now haven't quite got my head around how I could have done things differently. But you know, we carried on and the business was still growing, and you know, every year we grew and it was all incremental growth and it was fantastic and the market was exploding at the same time. So that felt like there was real opportunities. And at one point I did explore getting investment, but I didn't go through with it. I think it was around that time actually. Because I was having a baby and I didn't feel like it was right to take other people's money on when I knew I was kind of growing my family. And I had this constant like turmoil in my mind about wanting to start and grow my family, but also having the responsibility and obviously the passion for my business. Mm. So we then got to a position where we needed to move from our manufacturer that we had outsourced to, because we were starting to outgrow them as well, and it was starting to take up more of my time. So there was one incident where I had to go down to the factory on a Sunday because we'd just launched with Sainsbury's, and you know they just couldn't cope, and they were a small business as well. So me and my dad went down to help them pack, and I was just like, I can't do this. So at that point we decided we needed to find a bigger manufacturer. And so just a very chance meeting in Dubai of all places. I was on like a government funded trip to for exporting, and I met a business director up there, and just one of those incredible coincidental meetings basically. And obviously I was now pregnant, so I decided I was going to move house and relocate, which would also involve an element of renovation, quite a lot of renovation on the house that we'd bought. At the same time as being pregnant, and at the same time as going through this huge factory transfer. And my husband, bless him, said, "I really think we're trying to do too much in 1 year." And me, I was just like, "Don't be ridiculous. We have to do it all now." You know, I'm very, but you know, and thankfully, I don't think he'll ever listen to anything, any podcast that I do. He was right about that one thing, because it did nearly kill me, because I was just so stretched. And the, you know, house renovations are so stressful. Well, moving house in general is stressful. And he had to pack up the whole house because I was 25 weeks pregnant and my back, like my pelvis was really painful. So I couldn't do anything. So he did that all on his own. And then we had like, we couldn't live in the house that we'd bought because it needed so much work. So we ended up living with my mum and dad.
Oh my God.
And the factory that I was transferring to was sort of 200 and odd miles away. And I was going there every month. And so like, so as I got more and more pregnant, it just got harder and harder and harder. And just looking back now, I'm just like, oh, what was I, you know, what was I doing? It was just really, you know, really, really challenging. And I just, after I had Monty, I was so depleted. You know, when you have a baby, you're sort of depleted anyway, because you sort of, it sucked everything out of you.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that sort of nature takes care of that. It kind of forces you almost to stop working.
Yeah. Well, I didn't, I never, anyway.
Your baby brain just, is, you know,
well, yeah.
I don't know how you kept on going.
Yeah. I never stopped working. And, well, I wouldn't recommend it, but I'm just that sort of, I am that sort of highly strung, nonstop kind of person. And I regret what I did, because I didn't spend enough time, and that's not true, because I spent a lot of time with Monty when he was obviously a tiny baby. But I don't think I was as present as I should have been, because I was so worried about the business, because at the same time as that, it was coming to the end of podology, because the market had really exploded. So those 18 months that we spent trying to transferring the business, it was like a really critical point in the market. And there was lots of innovation. There were bigger brands doing a lot of innovation in that area. And I just hadn't been focusing on innovation within podology, because we were focused on doing the transfer. And we had to get the existing products transferred successfully before we really did any innovation. And we did bits of innovation, but it wasn't enough. And it wasn't, you know, again, I haven't spent that much time sort of analysing it and thinking, what would I have done differently? Because that's sort of just torturous. Mm. But basically, I had Monty in September 2018. And then early in 2019, Sainsbury's contacted us and said, you know, we need to have a meeting. And I just knew it was like one of those things that you dread. And I was just really like physically not in a good place. I had like a really bad eye infection, and I was just really run down basically. And I identified the fact that I wasn't in a great place, but I needed to sort of keep going, and was completely committed to keeping going. And one of the things I had actually done was I'd taken on some really brilliant people who I had known from my time when I was at M&S, who had started their own business, who now supported businesses. And I'd started working with them, and the difference that made was enormous. But looking back now, I wish I'd have done it sooner. But anyway, that made a huge difference, and we were in a much better place in terms of the business structure and what we were doing and the plans that we had. But unfortunately, the market kind of caught up with us, and we lost our listing at Sainsbury's, and Goo came in coincidentally at the same time, and we lost that business. And that just really, about 4 months later, that's when I sort of looked at everything and was like, I can't do this anymore. It was the first time in the history of the business that I was looking at spreadsheets and thinking, you know, we don't have a cash flow problem. This is, we don't have enough volume problem. And because we'd moved to this much bigger factory as well, we needed that volume, and we needed to be able to be getting more volume and not losing it. So I knew that unless we put, you know, more money into the business, we wouldn't see January. So I at that point made the decision, and I decided to liquidate the business. And obviously initially it was like a really very difficult thing to sort of accept, that because I'd spent like 7 years thinking this is the worst thing that had ever happened to me, was like podology not being successful, which sounds ridiculously dramatic. But quite quickly, once I'd made that decision, it felt like a huge weight had lifted, but also hugely disappointing. And I felt like a huge failure, which isn't a great place to be. But the speed at which it happened is the thing that really surprised me, and something that I talk about, because you imagine that something like that will happen quite slowly, and it will kind of, and looking back now, you obviously see the signs happening and think, well, obviously it was going to come to an end, but it really wasn't like that, because we had also just won a listing. So we'd lost a listing, but we'd won a listing, but the listing that we'd won, I needed time for the traction to get going. And I think it's quite telling of the position that I was in, because I wasn't happy. I wasn't enjoying what I was doing anymore. I'd completely lost, because it had been such a, you know, a roller coaster, as it always is. But I had lost touch with the things that I enjoyed. And so the whole experience had just become quite painful, because I was trying to do things that I, you know, aren't my strengths, and I wasn't focusing on the right things. Yeah, it was a very, very difficult decision to make, and a horrible thing to sort of have to tell people as well. But it was important for me that I did tell people, and that people heard it from me. And so I did a video that I posted on LinkedIn, and I did it like very quickly. And had I known how far reaching that video would have gone, I would never have posted it, because I just had no idea that would happen. But it was actually really beneficial, because people contacted me and sort of said, you know, thank you so much for sharing that, and they sort of saw it as like a real show of vulnerability, which isn't why I did it, but I can see why it was a show of vulnerability. I'm an oversharer. So it was like I just wanted to make sure that people that I'd worked with knew what was happening, because the supply of product basically just stopped. And so I didn't want suppliers to be thinking, you know, what's going on. I wanted to be sort of honest about it and what had happened. And that was actually really good for me mentally. Like looking back now, I think that, because I think a lot of people sort of hide from something like that. And it definitely helped me to be honest about it. And, you know, it still helps me to talk about it, because it was a decision that I made. And I don't know, you know, perhaps if we'd have put more money into the business, things would have changed. But I actually didn't want that moment made me realize that I didn't want to see, because I didn't want to risk the money. But I also, it forced me to recognize that actually the last year particularly had been very, very difficult for me. And personally, it wasn't working for me, and financially it wasn't working. So that's when it was kind of like, this needs to stop. Because it's amazing actually how many people contacted me who I know and said, you know, this happened to me. I had to liquidate a business a few years ago, but I've never talked about it. And I was like, wow, like I didn't know that. Like, and it made me realize that it's actually something that people don't talk about. because it does feel like a shameful thing that you shouldn't talk about, but actually, you know, it does happen. Of course it happens. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's sort of what I've come to realize. And I had no plans of what I was going to do afterwards, because obviously I had no idea that it was going to happen. And I really felt like, you know, what am I going to do? Is anybody going to want to work with me? Am I ever going to be able to get another job again? You know what I mean? Like really dramatic, ridiculous thoughts that we all torture ourselves with. And, you know, thankfully, very quickly, I was contacted by Jess Harris, and John Stapleton had put her in touch with me. So that was amazing, because so quickly after that, I'm just like eternally grateful to John Stapleton, who I've who I, you know, loved before that happened. But he told Jess to call me because he knew what had happened, and she was looking for someone to help her. So she became my first client of my consultancy business, which I then set up. And I was planning on giving myself like 3 months off and then sort of restarting and rethinking what I was going to do in January. But by December, I already had 3 clients, and it was like people were just sort of contacting me going, God, you know what, it could definitely help with your experience. And, you know, I've obviously now in the sort of the following nearly 18 months, I've really, you know, realized the value that 7 years of, you know, going through the podology torture years, you know, it was an incredible experience. And there were so many brilliant things to come out of that business. And you know, looking back now, I had so much fun during that time, and I got to spend such incredible time, you know, working with my mum and dad. And me and my mum used to do loads of shows together, which like feels like an alien universe away these days. And me and my dad used to manufacture everything together. You know, it was a really incredibly special time. And it's quite nice to have sort of stepped away from it a bit, because they're the memories that I'm left with and not the really difficult ones. But yeah, you know, as you say, Harry, it has given me, you know, the most incredible experience, coupled with the proper product development grounding that I had prior to setting up Podology. You know, those two things coupled together have enabled me to do what I'm doing now. And I must say I'm in a, you know, brilliant place now, and I absolutely love what I'm doing, and it all feels really worth it. And that's really important. That's why I talk quite a lot about what I've been through and what I do now, because I want to go back and tell myself 4 years ago, you know, it's all going to be all right. You know, just keep going, and, you know, whatever, you don't know what the future holds. And I certainly didn't know, or, you know, I didn't let myself think about what would happen if Podology didn't carry on. But I did always used to sort of say to myself, you know, it'll be okay, because that's the kind of thing that my mum always says, it'll be all right in the morning.
that's really amazing. And it's amazing to be able to have that positive mindset to turn it around into a positive way of thinking about it. Yeah. Whether sort of rewinding a little bit into those tough times, because it sounds like it was really quite a rough time at some point, and when you decided to make the liquidation decisions, and sort of from a mental health perspective, were there things that helped you get through those times? Things that you did just to.
Yeah, well, I've always really enjoyed yoga, so it's something that I always try and do, and I'm very conscious that when things are difficult, it's almost when I need it the most. But I didn't do enough around that time. And I think for me, it was my support network that were, you know, most valuable. So my parents, my husband, and just, you know, trying to remember to appreciate what I had and the fact that I had my children, and, you know, and it was a very difficult period of time because I had had a business and had little ones as well. But, you know, I was very grateful to have had the opportunity to have had my children, you know, so I was trying, you know, I was always very grateful for that, and the good things around me. But really it's been since then that I started running, basically, and that's made a massive difference to me, because I never allowed myself enough time to myself. Probably because I had this, you know, I was having babies and I had a business. There's just, it leaves very, very little time for yourself. And now I do have to still force myself to have time for myself, especially like in the last year, everybody has felt it, because there's just been nowhere to go and no escape. But I found running to be really, really incredible. And my sister actually joined me up for I have never been a runner, I must stress. And my sister basically joined me up for this 40-day running streak where you run just a mile, but every single day. And the lady that ran it is like hardcore, like you properly get told off if you don't do it every day. So I'm actually not in that group anymore because it just got too serious. But I did 100 days consecutively, and since then it's like made me into being able to run, which I would say before I couldn't run. And that really does help me, because when I'm running, you are kind of in your own head, and you sort of give yourself that space. So they're the things that I do to sort of help my mental health, is running and yoga. It's got to like fit in with your life, because like, you know, I was at my little boy gets me up really early, so I am really tired all the time. So I know, like, I can't do anything that's going to completely exhaust me, which is why I've always really liked yoga, I think, because it's pretty low intensity. But I just like the breathing and everything in yoga, and it does. I don't naturally relax. I'm not a very naturally relaxed person. So, but yeah, I do find yoga a really good way to relax.
That's brilliant. And I mean, running has that same sort of meditation quality, actually. I'm not a runner myself, but people have described it that way, where the same as when you practice yoga, you can't really focus on anything else.
No, and your mind
in difficult positions.
Your mind really does wander when you're running. And I think it's helped me in the last year to come to terms with what happened with Podology and think about some of the things that, you know, if I did it again, what would I do differently? And a big one, you know, one of those is, you know, get more help, get more expert help. And that's why, like, people that now work with me, I'm like, really, I just think it's brilliant. They reach out. And the thing is, because I had that industry experience that you mentioned at the beginning, it gave me the ability to do quite a lot on my own. Whereas people that now seek my help, they need my help because they don't know the industry, and it almost gives them an advantage because they're reaching out for that help really early on. And that's something that I wish I'd have done sooner, basically. And that all of these thoughts kind of come to me while I'm running, which I also really like, because it's kind of nice to sort of not torture yourself when something goes wrong. I could torture myself with it, but I don't. I just like to think about, you know, what would I do differently and what could have made things different and would I have wanted things to be different, and all of those kind of things. And I just quite like thinking about that. And so I mentioned Jess Harris, who was my very first client. So I'm now co-founder of her brand. And that's amazing, because I love working with Jess, and it's incredible having a co-founder, and her background isn't food, and obviously mine is. And I love that. And I'm so appreciative of her sort of having me on her journey with her, because I feel like it's kind of sort of cathartic for me, because I can sort of put all the learnings that I've had from Podology into that business, but also I've got this other amazing fresh set of eyes with this very capable person that has a completely different background to me. And you know, that it's, I feel really privileged to be able to do that as well, with a completely different mindset to what I had with Podology.
That sounds perfect. Perfect way to end our chats as well. Also, you mentioned that you're launching a new podcast. Would you like to tell our listeners about that? Because I think that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, so I'm launching a new podcast called Oh For Food's Sake, and it launches on the 1st of April. And I'm doing it with my co-host, Amy Wilkinson, who is a friend of mine who I met in my graduate job when I was at Bacavor. And she has, we've had sort of very, we've mirrored each other's careers in many ways. When we talk to each other, it's really funny, because we worked together at Bacavor, and then when I left and went to Sainsbury's, she left and went to another business, and she was my supplier when I was a product developer. And then I moved to M&S and she moved, and then she was a supplier there. And it was just, we like mirrored so many things. And she went through quite a big health crisis where she basically burnt out and developed a chronic illness. And she is now, and then went back into the workplace in a marketing role. So she's worked in technical development, marketing, and she's now a business coach. And so we basically teamed up, and we're doing a podcast about how to succeed happily in the food industry, whether it whether you're an entrepreneur or whether you have a career in the food industry, basically sharing our stories and our hindsight and giving our tips and advice and, you know, talking openly about the struggles, basically.
Absolutely, me too. Well, thank you so much, Lucy, for coming on and sharing your story. Absolutely fascinating. And you've got such a great positive outlook on it as well, which I really, really appreciate being a fellow yogi.
Thanks for having me. Nice to talk to you both. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming on Untold, and really, really, really fantastic chat. And we look forward to speaking to you soon.
Thank you.